Welcome to Alchemist X, Innovators Inside, the official podcast of Alchemist X, the corporate services division of the Alchemist Accelerator. Alchemist X operates corporate programs for spin-ins and spin-outs. Here on AXII, you'll follow host Rachel Chalmers, head of Alchemist X, as she talks to corporate innovation's highest achievers and most compelling thought leaders. These are fly-on-the-wall conversations with leading practitioners in the field. They'll share their lessons learned so that you can accelerate your development. So sit back, relax, and get ready to level up.
Today's guest is Myra Seha, a sales and marketing expert, venture capitalist, and podcast host. She's currently head of business development and partnerships for HubSpot and the host of Venture Unplugged. Myra spent 9 years as president of the Princeton Entrepreneurs Network and led 21 investments for Princeton University's first seed fund. Myra, it's so great to have you on the show.
Hi, Rachel. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. At Princeton, you represented entrepreneurship and innovation within what's effectively a huge company in the business of higher ed. Can you talk about the perks and challenges of that role?
Absolutely. By design, when you're inside a 200-plus-year-old institution, you have to deal with a lot of institutional inertia and bureaucracy, which can be familiar in any corporate setting. Now, in order to create change and really drive innovation, you have to start with a startup mindset and be able to move quickly. So the whole process is actually very similar to the way a founder will go through launching a company. It all starts with having a vision, a mission, and then being able to create a mission that really inspires and aligns both internal and external stakeholders. You want to work through each stakeholder, get them on board, and then once you get the green light to execute, the hard part actually starts, which is then delivering a clear plan, making sure that you have the right KPIs, and continuing to iterate quickly. And then, you know, for your last question, when you think about how it was accepted in terms of the community, we really want to be thinking about wide adoption. And so for us, the Princeton community has always had a long-term tradition of innovation and entrepreneurship, whether it's some top founders like Jeff Bezos, Nick Faust, who started Jet.com, or Lauren Bush at Feed.com. All of this rich history really ties together to really support our mission for innovation.
Did you see a lot of pushback from folks within Princeton who were suspicious of these changes?
No, I think one of the key things is to figure out how to communicate a very large, ambitious goal, right? And I think when you look at where my strengths are, it's really to be able to take very complex ideas, very ambitious goals, and then being able to communicate those as to how do they actually benefit the community. And once you're able to do that, then you really get people to rally around it.
What were some of your KPIs? What did people measure you against? And how did you do against those goals?
So when we were looking at KPIs, one of the things that was clear and foremost was how many founders did we fund? And how do we set up a good cadence for that, right? It's not just investing in the most, but you actually want to be looking at how successful are they? So we, in addition to the number of startups that we founded, we looked at how often did they get follow-on rounds, or were there any other metrics of growth, such as revenue or community building? And from there, that's how we're able to tell a narrative and a story in terms of how successful each quarter was.
And when you look back over that experience, what are you proudest of?
One of the things that I'm very passionate about is actually providing access and opportunity to female and diverse founders. One of the exciting female founders that I invested in was Danielle Cohen-Showitt. She was the founder of this small startup called Gloss Genius. And it was a startup that had been struggling to get VC funding attention because it was a vertical SaaS company appealing to a very unique demographic. This appealed to small businesses that were particularly tailored to hair salons. So this is a great example of a female founder who has a very unique insight into unique pain point and that is able to address it with unique problem solving, yet that might not be as widely or commonly funded. And so having actually a seat at the table during those investment discussions, I think really brought about that change of changing the perspective and the mindset of what SaaS traditionally looks like.
Did you find that particularly with your female founders, they face the same challenges in downstream fundraising? Even if they'd got that boost from Princeton, they still face the same prejudice when they went out to other institutional investors?
I think it's a great starting point, right? So that was really part of the intention is that once you get one top accredited investor, it can actually help deliver that next conversation piece to other well-known institutional investors. And that's really what we saw, that it actually helped not only one tell that narrative of, hey, this large institutional investor is backing us, but also we had a set of mentors that included our investment committee that then would be able to open up doors, make introductions, that that were needed and much welcome for these female founders.
That makes sense. It's a matter of getting your foot in the door and then being able to make change from the inside. You've had so many successes. If you had one do-over, what might you do differently?
I actually think about understanding the power of social media much earlier on. So now we've talked about how I have my own personal podcast, Venture Unplugged, and almost every day I really see how powerful of a platform it is, not only as my personal brand, but also in the massive reach that it can have. Over the last year, I think this is actually one trend that has changed a lot, which is that now your physical presence, right, isn't always necessary to be able to communicate to one-on-one people or even a larger audience. So my theory is actually that going forward, your digital presence is going to be even more and more important than your physical presence. So I do want to encourage everybody, whether you're an employee at a corporation, a founder, an aspiring tech person, to think more about how you can influence your digital presence. And I also want to encourage people who may think that, hey, it might be too late to get started. It's actually not. There's an old saying that says the best time to have planted a tree is 12 years ago, but the second best time is today, right? And getting started.
What do you think makes innovation so difficult? And in particular, this kind of corporate innovation you were doing within Princeton, where you're pushing against a large existing institution.
You know, change is incredibly hard for a couple of different reasons. One of them is that most people really prefer the sense of stability and comfortability. And founders, and you should consider yourself a founder if you're pushing innovation, right? You're creating something out of nothing. You, in essence, have to make people uncomfortable. You have to bend what is normally thought of as the traditional way and force a different outcome. And for that, you need to be able to paint that picture that I talked about creating that mission that really rallies people. And you have to get people to commit to it and rally around you. So it's ultimately about upending these strong power structures, forcing an outcome, and then being able to create momentum to really drive through that change and actually see it happen.
How would you distill all of this experience into, say, two or three lessons for our listeners?
Well, one, I think that you always want to be thinking about your personal life, whether it's your career, whether it's innovation, really as taking complete ownership. And what I mean is that you want to be making a plan for where you want to be headed and driving that plan, seeing it full through. I always believe that you should be absolutely action-oriented and be the entrepreneur of your own life. And ultimately, I think that has served me well is this idea that you should always create urgency as a habit and you should envision where you want to go. Otherwise, you get taken in different directions. So the best way is if you're in the driver's seat and can command your own adventure.
How would you advise someone who is struggling to create that sense of urgency?
The first thing would be is to create the own sense of urgency for yourself, right? It's this idea that you need to have a vision that's compelling enough for you to wake up in the morning, right? Where it makes those long days very short. And until you're able to clarify that for yourself, you're not going to be able to clarify that for other people and get other people to join your journey. And that's ultimately one of the hardest parts. When you look at founders or people that drive innovation within companies, what they are very good at is it's not just charisma, it's the ability to convey a concept, to convey a mission, to articulate the why behind it. That's what really gets people together. And that's what can help change happen within some of these heavily resistant environments.
So what is it for you? What's the vision that gets you up in the mornings?
It's really driving absolute change within the startup ecosystem and community and whatever that means, right? Whether it's doing one-on-ones with founders or a part of it is when I do public speaking and running my own podcast, all of that really helps to, again, foster this notion of entrepreneurship and further that.
How do you think the pandemic might affect corporations in the longer term?
The pandemic has had a massive acceleration for a couple of concepts. One of them, I think, is this work from home concept or becoming a remote first culture. And that can mean a couple of different things. So one, it's you're seeing actually companies starting to adapt to 100% remote to 50% remote. But whatever that discretion is, you are seeing this pull from now employees demanding some flexibility in their work schedule. And also having had a full year to really prove to their corporations that, hey, they can be just as productive, if not more. And that sense is ultimately going to be affecting longer term in terms of how do we return back to work. We're seeing a lot of companies really pay attention to this and really strive to solve for it. And I think there's a couple of amazing companies that are doing this well. I was recently talking to Brex, who's gone fully remote. Our company, HubSpot itself, has gone into a flexible option and a couple of others. But ultimately, really the way that you want to be thinking about is it's not just solving for the physical space, but you also want to be solving for culture. And I think that's going to be where we want to be paying attention is how do you build a strong culture that can then help employees feel that sense of belonging so that they can actually be their best selves, bring their best selves to work wherever that is, and drive those results that are needed.
So as an introvert, I've really enjoyed working from home and having lots of downtime. Are you more of a work from home person, or do you think you'll move into the hybrid model?
Oh, I'm a hybrid person. I consider myself an extrovert introvert, which means for me, I love being in large crowds. I feed off the energy of people, but then I also enjoy that downtime and having that thinking time to really strategize and put some thoughts together that then reinforce some of my more public activities.
Which is a great segue to my next question. How do you avoid burnout?
Burnout is definitely a real thing, but the way I think about burnout is that it actually happens from not being mindful about recharging. And I think everybody needs to figure out what does that recharging mean for them. So for me, it includes absolutely making sure that you're taking care of not only your physical health, but also your mental health, and making sure that you're taking preventative measures and being proactive. So for me, it'll include making sure that I have a good morning routine that includes exercise, meditation, and a gratitude journal, which I started a couple of years ago, and really just helps to center your day, set your intention for the day, and helps prevent some of that burnout that can happen. Now, when I think about burnout, you always want to be thinking about what are your biggest constraints in life? It's not just money, but what it really is around time and energy. So being able to make sure that you're able to operate at your peak performance from an intentional point of view rather than a reactive point of view is really going to be the key for long-term success.
Can you share with us the intention that you set for today?
First of all, I was very grateful to have this invitation to be on your show. When I set my intention, it was really to be completely open and allow for my words to really transcend and hopefully connect with somebody out there.
How do you decide on an intention for the day? What's your criteria for choosing one?
I think I look at what is the biggest thing that will have the longest impact in that day, right? And I do this also on a weekly basis. So you can't focus on too many things. The key with any strategy is to focus on a few things and also decide on the other things that you won't be able to focus on. So for me, it's what is 1 to 2, 3 things that I absolutely have to do today that are going to have the widest impact in both that week, in my career, or whatever that is.
You mentioned your podcast. What is the best way for our listeners to connect or follow your work?
I encourage people to check out ventureunplugged.com. Also follow me on Twitter at MyraSeha007. And if you ever want to connect with me in terms of HubSpot, you can also check out hubspot.com/startups or DM me directly on LinkedIn.
What does the future look like for you personally? How do you think about the next 5 years and how to get where you need to be?
I am absolutely excited about the future, but I think I've always been a general optimist. One of the things that excites me about the future is really looking at how the pandemic has accelerated technology and becoming a digital first person, and also have corporations have had to become digital first in order to remain competitive. You can see this whether it's at my current work at HubSpot, or it's actually looking at how startups are being developed and where innovation needs to happen. And that part of it really excites me is how is the world changing? How is it going to adapt? What new technologies are going to come out of it? How do we go to that next level?
I'm granting you a wish. And for the next 5 years, everything in our industry goes exactly the way you hope it would. What does the world look like in 2026?
In 2026, I think we are better able to leverage our personal time in the way that we want to leverage it, right? So I think where technology can help is really getting rid of some of that mundane task or the things that we don't want to spend too much of our personal time in, so that then we're actually able to focus on that one-on-one with time with people. I think that personal connections are definitely here to stay. While you may still be working from home, it's really those human interactions that will lead to creativity, lead to those sparks that then you're able to execute no matter where you are at. So I think it's really having more flexibility to really enjoy and do the things that you love to do better and choose when and how you want to do those.
What are you reading at the moment? Do you have any recommendations for our listeners?
Absolutely. Actually, little tidbit as to myself, I was a comp lit major in college, but one thing that I'm reading right now, it's called Atomic Habits. And this idea that if you set one habit, you can hyperlink the next one and it can actually help you start making dramatic changes. And remember, most of the things that you do seem small, but the incremental changes, that's actually where you see the effects. So if you want to start jogging in the morning, it's something as simple as setting a visual cue, like your tennis shoes, laying those out, so that then now you start cueing yourself and start getting into that habit, and developing streaks of success leads to more success. That applies to your work also. The more wins you can start lining up, small wins really lead to those bigger wins. So atomic habits would be my recommendation for the group.
It's been a really popular recommendation. That's not the first time it's come up, but you're a complete major. I'm going to push you to recommend a fiction as well as a nonfiction read.
Absolutely love Ender's Game.
Wow.
Yeah. I think that really challenges a lot of the technology that is now available or going to be soon available. So I highly encourage people to check that one out.
Say more about that. What is it that appeals to you in that particular book?
I really think it's this idea that it takes you out of your own space. So what I love, I read fiction and nonfiction. I think what fiction really allows you to use your imagination and creativity and really submerge yourself. So I think that was one of the latest books that I've read where I could literally devour that over the weekend and not notice time passing by. So I think that's one of the things when I know it's a good book to realize that, hey, I'm almost done with this and I'm finally looking up. That's how I can tell it's a good book.
Do you see yourself in the protagonist?
I've always considered myself as a pioneer and trying to break new ground. So there's always that element when you look at the leading character who is the hero of the story.
Is there anything else I should have asked you?
No, I guess the one thing that maybe we haven't covered is what I'm looking at in terms of my personal latest investments, which I'll throw that as a bonus. The other thing that's really intriguing to me right now in terms of personal investments is actually looking at the crypto markets. And by that, I think it actually also applies to corporate innovation because of their blockchain technology. I think it'll be very interesting to see how companies adapt to blockchain adoption, to even currency exchanges, this idea of identity. It's definitely hitting a next wave of evolution. So it'll be exciting to see what the future holds for corporate innovation in that category.
Do you worry about the carbon footprint of particularly the proof of work-based blockchain implementations?
I think that that's something that will be solved. I definitely think it's of concern. And I'm hoping that because now it's taking a more prominent effect on the world stage, that then we're able to have bigger discussions around it and hopefully address some of those concerns.
As you say, we should be curious. It's going to be interesting times to come for sure.
Absolutely.
Myra, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been a pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much.
This has been Alchemist X, Innovators Inside. If you enjoy our show, we'd be grateful if you could give us a rating or comment on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. You can find the transcript of this conversation, plus links to whatever books, articles, TV shows, and apps we talked about on alchemistaccelerator.com/podcasts. If you'd like to chat more about our corporate programs for spin-ins and spin-outs, email us at innovators@alchemistaccelerator.com. We love hearing from you, so stay connected by following Alchemist X on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Until next time, this has been Alchemist X, Innovators Inside.